Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, hello everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio SmackDown Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing this week's SmackDown Live at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, folks, this is the first SmackDown after the McMahon family had promised a huge shakeup. No more business as usual. They're going to listen to the fans. We are the new authority. The wrestlers will be on handcuffed. They'll be promoting people that deserve to be promoted in the eyes of the fans. A whole new WWE era, supposedly, that started Monday night, although if you watched Monday night, it was rather invisible. Now, to be fair, this is the holiday season. And to be fair, they taped Raw right after the Raw you saw, and they taped SmackDown right after the SmackDown you saw for next week so that the wrestlers can be home for the holidays. So you cannot expect huge, sweeping changes right now. I mean, that would have left them zero time, really. So I'm not going to go crazy saying, oh, it's the same old, until we finish the end of the year. We'll see what happens the second week into 2019. And then I'll expect some changes. They'll have plenty of time to sort it out, won't they? But right now, with the holidays and the shows being taped, you're going to have to give them a little bit of a little leeway. But after all, they could have at least give us a glimpse. And the best they did was, well, you're going to see new faces. And as we discussed at length on last show, new faces doesn't mean anything. You've called up a lot of new faces and you've misused them. The Revival, Sanity, Almas, they've all been misused. So calling up more to misuse is not exactly change. So we'll see where that goes. Before we get started with the SmackDown report, of course, the news hits that Impact Wrestling is going, in fact, to the Pursuit Network. I'm sure everyone is collectively saying, is that a real network? Is that a real channel? It is. I don't know if my buttons go high enough to reach the number it's on. A few more numbers up and you get to where it's radio stations, you know, if you have that kind of a cable system or satellite system, you know, where you can choose from jazz or easy listening or classic rock. They're just a few knob turns away or a few remote pushes away from there in the Pursuit Network. And I know, yes, it's a subsidiary of Fight. I don't care. Then why isn't it on Fight? On the Pursuit Network. You know what the Pursuit Network shows? Deer hunting. Maybe they'll go on Cabela's next. Does Cabela's have a network? Maybe they'll go there. Maybe the Food Channel needs a goddamn wrestling show, huh? This is ridiculous. Every time Impact starts to make a comeback, a boneheaded decision, a roadblock gets in their way. Now, there's been quite a buzz about Impact. I talk to wrestling fans on a daily basis. And it used to be no one ever mentioned Impact. Now, I would say a good 75% of the people I talk to say, oh, and by an Impact, you know, Impact just got Raven and they might be doing some writing with him, which would be a really good idea. He's a good creative writer. You know, this is happening, that's happening. I like this, I like that. There's a buzz about Impact. And now that buzz is about to be, they're on a channel that's going to be followed up by guys telling you how to shoot a deer and preceded by how to skin one, apparently. That's fantastic. What a coup. What a remarkable thing for Impact Wrestling. You might as well have stayed on Pop. The Pursuit Channel. Look it up. See what the ratings are for the Pursuit Channel when it's not hunting season. This is not going to help. It's just not going to help. And if Anthem Entertainment had such faith in them, why don't you just put them on the Fight Network bold and front and center? Why do you stick them on the Pursuit Network? You're better off on YouTube. Just be on YouTube. To hell with the network. Everybody has YouTube. You're not getting the Pursuit Channel. I do not think you're getting the Pursuit Channel unless you go pretty high up your cable package. I get it. But I've never actually, and I'm being dead honest with you, I don't think I've ever actually scanned that high up. It's in the late 600s on my tuner. And you got to pass all of those soccer channels, all of those infomercial channels, all of those foreign language channels, all of those channels that are just duplicates of channels, and all of those channels that you have to pay for. All of the, I believe that the adult channels you have to pass first. You have to pass Playboy, you have to pass Penthouse and Brazzers and every other thing. So here's kids, they're going to be flicking through the channel and they're going to be like, okay, well, let me see if I can find Impact. Oh, there's Hot MILFs. No, I'm not going to, that one's blacked out. Here's Three Way or No Way. I'm like, well, what the hell is going on? That's the best you can come up with? Maniac in the chat room saying the Food Network would be a better choice. It is. It's a better choice. Seen by more people. You might as well be on the Food Network. Can you imagine? Can you just imagine? I don't get it. I guarantee you there are channels on YouTube that get more views than the Pursuit Network. I promise you. So this is not good. So anyway, let's start with that news, Mike. So Impact goes to Pursuit where literally no one will be able to see them.
I'm looking at my guide on my TV for my cable company. I don't even have it. We don't, and this is one of the top 10 cable companies in the nation, Cox, and we don't even have it here.
Yeah, it's bad. Mike, it's bad. I get it. I didn't even know I got it, okay? That's how bad it is. All right? I had to look it up. I'm like, I don't get this. I know I don't get this. I never heard of it. And so I'm scanning through the top 400, 500, getting passed into the 600s. Friend of mine says, look in the late 600s, and yeah, there it is. Now I realize somebody's going to say, you don't have to scan all those channels. You can just put it in your favorites. Yeah, I know. But the idea is, for the person flicking channels that may just say, oh, wrestling, you're not going to flick through 680 of them. They're not going to get that, oh, look, wrestling's on, viewer. You're just not. You either, that means you got to know about Impact Wrestling to find it. So you're not going to get any new fans. All you're going to do is lose old ones because the old ones, a lot of them aren't going to have that station. There isn't going to be any new ones because you're not going to be accidentally found. You have to actively look for this channel. This is a very bad decision by Anthem. And again, if they're a subsidiary, a sister station of Fight Network, put them on the goddamn Fight Network. Put them on a streaming service. Try to get someone. My God, there's got to be something. Somebody out there has got to want Impact Wrestling better than the Pursuit Network. I am going to make a list of shows that's on the Pursuit Network. And I promise you, none of them are watched by more than a handful of people. Just ridiculous. It's just terrible. Todd, I know you watch Impact. Do you even get the Pursuit Network?
This is the first time I ever heard this channel, technically.
The same thing with me. I've never even heard of it. I don't know if I have it. Oy, this is bad. Maniac says it's on Dish. It's on Verizon. It's on a lot of them. But here's the thing. Who knows? So is the Home Shopping Club. Yeah, I don't want Impact Wrestling on the Home Shopping Network. You know, come on, folks. If you think 10 o'clock was a bad time slot on Pop, wait till you move to Pursuit. And your viewership goes to, I don't know, 450,000 if. It's a disaster. It's a disaster for Impact Wrestling. Anyway, let's get to a SmackDown. We start this out with Shane McMahon having a discussion with 90% of the locker room, talking about how it's going to be a new era and everybody's got to go out there and prove themselves and there's going to be more opportunities. And really all this is, it's a glorified pep talk and a way to tell the fans there are going to be no more general managers. And with that, we are told Paige is now the ex-general manager. But don't worry, she's staying with the company. Well, in what capacity? How come we weren't told what capacity? Because you don't know what capacity, that's why. Now, interestingly enough, her and Zelina Vega got into a big war of words on Twitter, almost as if there's going to be a feud, but I guarantee you, Paige is not stepping back in the ring. So I just don't know where this is going. Maybe she's going to run the women's division in some way, like Alexa Bliss might be. We don't even know the fate of Alexa Bliss on Raw. They didn't mention that. I smell the women are about to get their own TV show type thing. Watch very closely in 2019. We've been calling for this for about a year and a half. And I smell a possible women's show on the network. With the popularity of Becky Lynch and Charlotte is still very popular. Asuka's still very popular. You got Ronda Rousey now. Couple of others. They could draw. But right now, they don't want to take Becky Lynch off SmackDown. She's the top draw. So anyway, Shane makes the announcement that Paige is no longer the general manager, but she's going to stay with the company. It seemed kind of weak having everybody there and, you know, especially Daniel Bryan, who wasn't really supposed to care one way or the other anymore. I know he tried his best to look like he was disinterested or didn't care, but all in all, I think this spot to open the show was more of a tease for things to come than it was a worthwhile opening spot, Mike, because it didn't really go anywhere.
It didn't go anywhere. And look, I've seen around the internet, particularly on YouTube, people saying that, well, maybe Paige is going to start managing somebody. You know, that's why she's gotten into a war of words with Zelina Vega. Basically, Zelina Vega is basically Almas's manager. Basically.
Right.
You know, and so if you're going to have her if she's getting into a war of words with Zelina Vega and she's no longer the general manager, then obviously they're going to find somebody to put under her charge.
I mean, I hope that's where it's going because I can't see anything else. We'll see. Anyway, I'm going to take these out of order because some of these aren't all that important and some of them I want to talk a little more about than others. But let's get to the spot with The Miz. Vince McMahon, of course, is there. He came out. Well, we better go with that one first, I guess. Charlotte and Becky Lynch are both demanding their title shot. They're as mad as they can be at Ronda Rousey and they want the belt and Asuka should be defending and blah, blah, blah. Vince McMahon comes out and basically says, no, absolutely no. You shouldn't be whining about this. Now, here's my trouble. If you're simply going to replace the general managers of the show with the McMahon showing up every week, this is not going to work. McMahon and family is not why I know when they come on the air, the ratings boost, because that's because fans think something important is going to happen, not because they want to see them every week. When the authority was running wild and it was Triple H and Stephanie, no one wanted to see that. And no one wants to see it again. The occasional Vince McMahon showing up is good. The occasional Stephanie McMahon showing up is good, or Triple H showing up is good. The occasional, even Shane, although he's probably going to be on there more due to this angle with The Miz. But you can't just replace the general managers with the McMahons and say everything's changed now. Because then you're actually reverting. You're not moving forward, you're reverting. But anyway, McMahon comes down and says, we're not doing this anymore. There's no automatic rematch thing. You go to the back of the line, but Asuka is going to defend. She ends up having to defend against Naomi for no real good reason. Just Naomi came out. And she's automatically more deserving than Charlotte or Becky Lynch because New Era Wrestling says bets are off. Everybody gets an opportunity. So I guess now the thing is, you know, anybody can step up, and okay, but that doesn't really make a lot of sense, does it? I mean, you are supposed to have to earn a title opportunity. It was a good match. Becky and Charlotte sit at ringside for some ungodly, unknown reason. I don't know why they would choose to watch it, but they did. Asuka wins after a decent match by tap out. And what I'm told we're getting, and if this is the truth, take it with a grain of salt, folks, because I don't have this written in rock by a very trusting source. But I'm told that Charlotte, way back when she took Becky Lynch's spot at the pay-per-view, when Becky Lynch was hurt, was promised in return she will be the main event of WrestleMania. And if that's the case, I have to think it's either Charlotte Asuka or Charlotte Ronda Rousey. Or maybe they'll throw Becky Lynch in a three-way dance or something. I don't know. But I can promise you this, and I'm not trying to be skeptical. It's all well and good that the women have the main event of pay-per-views. There is no woman currently on this roster, Becky Lynch included, that should be the main event of WrestleMania. Period. And the reason for that is very simple, because you haven't built up enough people to make it feel like this. It really is the main event. Simple as that. Now, you can do it just for historical purpose and say, oh, it's the first ever women's main eventing WrestleMania. That's great. But really, it should be because it's deserved. And right now, you haven't built up any feud enough. Maybe you can in this length of time, but right now I'm not seeing anything that would be, yes, that's definitely the main event. And definitely not with Charlotte. I hate to say it, but definitely not with Charlotte. Are you ready for a Charlotte, Becky Lynch, Ronda Rousey triple threat main event? Is that the best you can do at WrestleMania? That's what I'm asking. Is that the very best main event you can hope for? Because I don't think so. We saw a triple threat with them and Asuka. It was a good match. It wasn't the WrestleMania ending match, I'll tell you that. And you throw Ronda Rousey in there, and it's going to be less than it would be with Asuka. So I don't like it. You want that last moment of WrestleMania to be that big moment, and I don't know what that big moment would be. Becky Lynch wins. That's your big moment? Okay, but here's the deal. If you throw Charlotte into that match with Ronda Rousey, we all know why Charlotte's in that match. To protect Ronda Rousey so she doesn't have to be pinned by Becky Lynch. And that's not conducive to a great WrestleMania match. So I'm not for that right now. Unless you change my mind, I'm not for that. But anyway, it was a decent match, Mike. I mean, I understand they're trying to give more girls a chance here, but I don't, again, if you just trudge a girl out to lose, that's not really giving them a chance.
Right. And, but I do like the getting rid of the automatic rematch clause, you know, that type of thing. Yeah, I like the contractual. If it's written in a contract, sure. But why should a girl or a guy, for that matter, the night after or the 2 days after or 5 days after a pay-per-view, depending on when SmackDown's going to be on after they go to Fox, get their rematch? I mean,
you know why this has so often been the case, Mike? I'll tell you why it's so often been the case. Because there's nobody else that the fans want to see. That's usually the problem. You say, well, okay, it's going to be Daniel Bryan versus AJ Styles, and Daniel Bryan won, so AJ Styles should get his automatic rematch, and you're saying, well, there's a good reason for that. You've built up nobody else that anybody wants to see go against Daniel Bryan right now. That's the problem. Who over in Brock Lesnar territory? Who we got? Who do we have? That's the problem. That's always been the problem, is there isn't two or three contenders that you say, oh, well, I really want to see this guy now step up and try. No, it's always, well, those are the only really two people. Or those are the only three people. So my thought process is, well, what's worse? We get to see Asuka and Becky Lynch or Asuka and Charlotte again, or we get to watch a six-minute Asuka-Naomi match that we already know the outcome of. See, that's where the problem is. The automatic rematch can be boring, but it's not as boring as saying, okay, Asuka doesn't have to defend her title again against Becky Lynch or Charlotte. So, hey, Lana, you want a title shot? Well, guess what? I don't want to see it because I know where it's heading. Hey, Carmella, you want a title shot? I don't want to see it because I know where it's heading. If you had people, qualified people, that you built up as, yes, these are people who are definitely top contenders, then I do want to see it. But the WWE has to change that. Because right now, the automatic rematch is the only match anybody wants to see. You don't have anybody waiting in the wings. Anyway, The Miz goes backstage and has a pretty funny segment with Vince McMahon, where he basically asks Vince McMahon's blessing to be Shane McMahon's tag team partner. And Vince looks rightfully confused and not sure where the hell this whole thing is going, but he basically tells the Miz, I'm get your tag team partner. It's going to be a mixed match. And if you can win, then maybe we'll see. We'll see if I won't give you my blessing, but I might give you a nod of approval. It ends up being Mandy Rose, and they take on R-Truth and Carmella. R-Truth is hilarious. He calls Mandy Rose the wrong name. He calls her, I can't even think. Boy, it's been a long time. What the hell is her name, Mike? The Miz's wife.
Oh, Maurice.
Maurice, yeah. He calls her Maurice. That was pretty funny. Now he's called Carmella Maurice. He's called Mandy Rose Maurice. Basically, anybody with blonde hair is Maurice.
Oh, yeah, but right now, Carmella cannot be mistaken for Maurice.
No, not now.
So look, I like the ending of that match. We know that he's not going anywhere, and you can't be after you somewhat rehab Carmella by having her win that other mixed match, you cannot have her lose a match. So...
Right,
and if you're gonna keep this thing going, this whole dance break thing, this whole Carmella. And look, Carmella and Truth have a chemistry. I mean, you could say maybe it's because she practices her raps and all that stuff, but I mean, they flow well together when they do that stuff, and they look good. And look, that this all go to me. This all started when they put her on that screen in Saudi Arabia, got the Saudi Arabians all pissed off when all she was doing was dancing, you know.
Yeah. I agree. And Maniac in the chat room saying R-Truth needs a segment or a network show. Yeah, look, R-Truth has a lot to contribute. Maybe not in the ring. Although, listen, I don't see a difference between R-Truth in the ring right now and R-Truth in the ring 5 years ago. I don't see any difference. He's not slower. He don't look less capable. I know he's 50, but I don't care if he's 60. If he can wrestle like that, what the hell's the difference? Now, I'm not saying, you know, title shot or anything, but listen, R-Truth is, here's what R-Truth is good for. R-Truth is the perfect guy to get a couple of low-level wins, get the crowd really happy and you know, into R-Truth. He's a nice guy. He's a funny guy. He likes the audience. He jokes around with everybody. And that way, when a major heel does something horrible to him, there's a lot of heat because the fans say, oh, that's effed up to do that to R-Truth. But I bet you he can't do that to AJ Styles. You know, that's the way it, that's how it goes in the wrestling business. Oh, well, yeah, he did that to R-Truth, you know, and that was uncalled for, but he's not going to do that to Rusev. That's how that works. So R-Truth is the perfect guy to give some low-level wins, get him into like a lower mid-card status, give him his own segment where he can have fun, joke with the fans, always give him a segment on TV so the fans are used to him being funny and cool, and then when something horrible happens to him at the hands of a heel, that heel gets instant heat going into his feud with whoever. That's R-Truth's perfect placement. So anyway, R-Truth actually loses that match. The Miz wins. I got to tell you, folks, The Miz is single-handedly making this gimmick work or this storyline work because this storyline is crap. I don't know where it's going, and I don't care, because no one wants to see Shane McMahon tag team with The Miz. No one does. Certainly not permanently. And having The Miz be like starstruck, Shane's my best friend, is totally the opposite of everything The Miz is. The Miz is arrogant, self-centered, thinks he's better than everybody else, always has himself in mind above others. It's not the same Miz. And for The Miz to be able to make this work even a little bit is a tribute to how good he actually is, because normally this wouldn't work at all. Still not overly interested in it, but at least the Miz spots that he does are worth watching, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I thought at first the Miz was going to turn face. It looks like he's going to probably stay heel for a while by the looks of it.
See, I don't know. I don't know where this is going. And worse, I really don't care. Because if you're going to turn him face off this, I don't know how you're going to do it. And if he's going to remain heel, he almost looks pathetic as a heel. So I'm just not for this in any way, shape, or form. If this is going toward The Miz versus Shane McMahon for the permanent custody of that trophy, that's a yawn fest. Even with The Miz and all of his skill, that's still a yawn fest. Now, what I do like, and I did like to see, the Usos came out, and they were talking about their tag team dominance and this, that, and the other thing, and then challenging people, and out come Anderson and Gallows. And Anderson and Gallows pretty much laid it on the line and said, look, it's been you three back and forth and back and forth for I don't know how long. And we're just lost in the shuffle. And the next thing you know, the match is made, and we have Anderson and Gallows at least being on the show and giving the Usos a tussle. Now, I'm saying to myself, once again, this is going to be tough, because if Anderson and Gallows wins, it's almost like the WWE is just saying, oh, we're just giving you what you want, and we don't care. You complained about Anderson and Gallows, fine, they beat the Usos. You happy? And that's not what we want at all. By the same token, we don't want Anderson and Gallows just wasted, because if you just trudge them out there to lose, how are they ever in contention? So this is a tricky thing. Usually you have Anderson and Gallows come out and squash a lower level team and work their way back up into the show's contention. They wanted to do this all in one night. Well, they didn't do a horrible job in that, because there is no ending. Out comes Sanity, who's the most underused. And they attack everybody and leave everybody laying. So we've established two more teams. Now, if you want to give me the club versus Sanity, I'll watch that. I'll definitely watch that. Because now you see we're not sure where this is going. Who is going to get superiority in that matchup? If it's the Usos, my assumption is the Usos are going to win to both of those teams. But if you're going to get Anderson and Gallows versus Sanity, that's good. I'll watch that. Not only is it going to be a good match, but the outcome is definitely in question. I don't know. So hopefully that's a positive sign, Mike. I think that that was the one thing on SmackDown I took away and said, good. That's a step in a positive direction.
That is a step in a positive direction. And furthermore, this could be a sort of way to flip the club. I mean, yeah, we got on them for Dr. Anderson and Gallows and the old day, and this could be a rehab, a kind of a rehabbing of the club from that crap that they gave us with that stuff, you know. And if they decide to flip the club, hey, I'm all for that too. And now as far as Sanity, yeah, but I'll say this: they better not put Nikki Cross on Raw. Nikki Cross needs to be with Sanity.
I agree. I agree with that. And I'm worried about it, too, because I don't know if the WWE sees it that way. But I hope they do. Anyway, overall, Todd, I thought they did a good job in that, because any outcome to that match that involved the Anderson and Gallows winning would have looked contrived. Anderson and Gallows losing, and it would have looked like they deserved to be obscure. So having Sanity come in was probably the perfect outcome.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it's been a good thing we first saw the Good Brothers in a while and Sanity in a while too. And maybe this is going in the right direction with a tag team division on SmackDown as well.
Yes, and that's one of the things, and of course we're going to talk about that more on Sunday when we actually do the show on what do the fans want. The WWE says we're the authority now. They say we're listening to our voice. Our voices will be heard. So we're going to have our voices aired here. And one of the things is take more interest in your tag team division, because you have really, really let that crap out on both brands. You, by grace and luck, you have three really, really, really good tag teams on SmackDown who work phenomenally well with each other. So you don't have as much work to do on SmackDown. You might have almost cleared it up already, because if you add those two to the mix and they're at least qualified teams who win occasionally, you got five good teams. That's more than enough. On Raw, disaster. We'll talk about that on Sunday, though. So let's go to now. Yes, I know a lot of people have been writing me saying, are you going to discuss what happened on the second SmackDown? Because some big things happened. Now, I'm not going to. I don't like spoilers. I'm not big on spoilers. Watch the show. Yes, we know what happened. Yes, you can go on the internet and find out. But I'm not going to say. Just watch the show. What I will say is this, though. We'll talk a little bit about it on Sunday, because some of the things that happen indicate to me very strongly that we may be saying goodbye to a couple of people. So there's a teaser for you for Sunday. Again, we're not going to talk about it too much, though, because it's not going to be aired until Christmas. I mean, that's bad. You know, it's a Christmas night type thing. Wow. It's not going to be watched by that many people, but it's a shame. You should watch it. Major things happen. Okay, so where are we? AJ Styles gets to team with Mustafa Ali, our newest member of SmackDown Live, to take on Daniel Bryan and Andrade Cien Almas, who is really one of the most underused guys. So I'm thinking to myself, well, one of three things could happen. None of which is Daniel Bryan pins AJ Styles. That's not going to happen. So we take that off the table, and we're left with Mustafa Ali pins Andrade Cien Almas. AJ Styles pins or taps out Andrade Cien Almas. Or AJ Styles flat out beats Daniel Bryan to show I can beat Daniel Bryan. And there's a small chance that Almas might pin Mustafa Ali. So those are the four possible scenarios. And what ends up happening is one that really I didn't consider, and that is Mustafa Ali flat out pins Daniel Bryan. Flat out pins him. That's a huge victory. And that means they are taking Mustafa Ali very seriously. That's your champion. That's the equivalent of Brock Lesnar being pinned in a tag team match by a newcomer. That's the equivalent. So they're taking him very seriously. Here's the problem. While he is as happy as he can be, and I am sure he was elated to get that victory, he botched his finisher, and he damn near killed Daniel Bryan. Watch it again, and you will see Mustafa Ali's knee hit Daniel Bryan almost in the throat. And if he hit him square in the throat, could have killed him. I believe there was a wrestler, trying to think of who it was, that jumped off the top rope with a knee drop and hit someone in the throat, and they died right there in the ring. I want to say that maybe Ox Baker was involved in it. I don't remember who. He came damn close. And from all reports of people I got that were actually at that show, and I try to find somebody who's at every one of these tapings who I can talk to, Daniel Bryan was actually unconscious for a second. Now, he came back later on because they taped two shows. So he's not hurt. But he came millimeters away from disaster. And I don't just mean, oh, I bruised my jaw, or oh, I lost a tooth. I mean disaster. And I'm going to tell you right now, that is not going to sit well with the powers that be. That is, I don't care how much Mustafa Ali apologized. And if you watch the tape, you can clearly hear him say, I'm sorry, Bryan, when he goes down. It doesn't matter. That is a life and death botch. That is very close to, I could potentially have killed you. And I'm telling you right now, the WWE is not going to put up with it. Just like they don't want Seth Rollins to do the curb stomp or certain moves, they're going to take that away from Ali. If they think it's that dangerous, they're going to say, no, this is not, we're not having this. Because you came a millimeter away from crushing a man's larynx. And we're just not going to do it. And if you take that away from Ali, you take it quite a bit of his presence away. So unfortunately, what should have been the happiest night of Mustafa Ali's life, which is scripted that he goes over the WWE champion, Daniel Bryan, is probably one of the most miserable nights of his life, because the first time, to my knowledge, he misses that move. He does it in a victory against Daniel Bryan, where it was the biggest one of his career. That's a shame. It's a damn shame. Now, look, Daniel Bryan's not going to hold him responsible. Daniel Bryan was fine. I'm sure he said, you know, whatever, it happens. But at the end of the day, there's a difference between Nia Jax punching someone in the face and breaking their nose and giving him a concussion, which is, there's no excuse for it, and missing a move that could potentially, if you miss it, kill you. Flat out kill you. In the ring, on television. And I'm not overstating this. If Mustafa Ali's knee comes down and Daniel Bryan's throat, and it almost did, he's probably dead. He's probably dead. So I don't know where this is going to go, Mike, but, you know, again, this reminds me of, it reminds me of Edge. When Edge first made his debut, he hurt one of the Los Barriquas with one of his moves. And there was a lot of people who said, I'm not taking that move and I'm not wrestling him because he's unsafe. And it took, I believe, Mark Mero to kind of say, well, I'll go in and wrestle him and kind of vouch for him. And eventually everybody came back around to Edge is safe and Edge is okay. But it threatened to stall his career. And this could threaten to stall Mustafa Ali's career.
It could, but then again, you look at the number of times he's done this thing over and over. And I mean, they could look at, yeah, they're not happy with him, but they could look at, you could look at this as being one bad night for this guy, even though it came in the biggest night of his career, one bad night with his move, you know, just like the one bad night came for Seth Rollins with that knee with John Cena, you know.
Here's the difference, Mike. The difference is one bad night with John Cena for Seth Rollins, and John Cena has to have his nose fixed. One bad night with Mustafa Ali and Daniel Bryan, and we could be attending Daniel Bryan's funeral. That's the difference.
You're right on that. And now, how many years did Hulk Hogan do that leg drop? If he
Forever.
Misses that one inch and lands on the guy's throat, it's the same exact thing, you know?
Yeah, but it's more easily controlled, because that's a leg drop where all you have to do is arch your knee and the underneath of your knee never touches anybody, you know? That's so easily controlled. When you're doing a triple flip in the air, no matter how good of an athlete you are, there's going to be nights where you screw up. I remember Neville talking at length about his Red Arrow and saying, you know, there are a couple of times I hit people. He hit Bo Dallas supposedly so hard, Bo Dallas crapped himself in the ring. But again, it doesn't involve your throat. It doesn't involve coming down that close. If that move that Mustafa Ali does, it may have to be modified in some respect. So there's no way. It's one thing if your knee hits you in the chest and you leave a bruise, or even if you say there's a potential for a broken rib. Almost every wrestling move has the potential for something bad to happen that might hurt you, but not kill you. See, that's where the difference is. That's why they banned the pile driver. That's why they banned certain moves, because they say, well, if this one screws up, it could kill you or paralyze you. If this one screws up, it breaks your nose. If this one screws up, it breaks your rib. If this one screws up, it might break your leg or your arm or your wrist. If this one screws up, you might get your nose broke. But the ones that they say, if this one screws up, we could be attending your funeral. Those are the ones they usually say, yeah, no, we're not doing that. We're not taking that chance. And I don't know if they can take that chance. And to have it be his first high-profile match in the WWE and have it happen to your champion, that's not good. It's not a good thing, Todd. I don't know where that's going to lead, but that's not a good thing for Mustafa Ali.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I think I seen a video recently the other day where somebody did a top maneuver off the top turnbuckle thing outside of the ring and almost broke his skull. I think it was an indie show or something. I don't remember what website it was, but a Facebook page.
Yeah, again, look, every wrestling maneuver, every one of them, has consequences that could happen. If Finn Balor really stomps you in the rib cage like that, maybe you broke your rib. Maybe it gives you a hernia. Maybe it does, you know, it gives you some internal bleeding. There's always something. But if Mustafa Ali, and again, watch it very carefully, maybe an inch difference, and Mustafa Ali's entire weight comes down across Daniel Bryan's throat, and if you crush someone's larynx, they are going to die. There is nothing you can do quick enough. And it's just, you know, listen. There does come a time in wrestling where you say, maybe that's too high risk. You can't risk something. No one is asking anybody to go in there and say, oh, well, I'll take that move, and, you know, hopefully I'll come home to my family tonight. No, you can't do that. You can't do that. So, unfortunately, we'll see if they let Mustafa Ali hit it again. Now, if I know Daniel Bryan, and I don't, obviously, but if I know his reputation, Daniel Bryan is going to say, not only is that just an isolated incident, but I'll take it again to prove I'm not afraid to take it, because I know he can hit it. And if he does that, yeah, maybe. But I still say Vince McMahon and company, who are so careful these days, are going to say, no, that was way, way too close to disaster. No more. No more. I mean, it wouldn't quite be as bad, but it would almost be like letting someone come down on one of them zip lines again like they did Owen Hart and say, oh, well, 99% of the time it doesn't break. Yeah, but how about the one time it did? You know, I don't know. We'll see where this goes with Mustafa Ali. What I do know is he's a really talented guy, and I'm sure he feels terrible. And the best night of his life probably turned into not a good one. Now, Daniel was not hurt. He came out later on. That's the only spoiler I'm going to tell you, is he come out on the second show and he's fine. But there is no question, if you watch that tape, that he averted disaster by a very small margin. Very small. Aside from that, what do we get? Well, we get Rusev saying he wants a title match against Shinsuke Nakamura, and he is going to get it. He got it. And you'll see that this coming week. It's already been taped. And we have an apology, so to speak, from Samoa Joe that turns into a half-hearted beatdown by Jeff Hardy, who, again, just isn't, I don't know, he's just not working for me. Although he was much better on the mic this week. Much better. And for him to admit, yeah, listen, I've had my share of ups and downs here. But I've corrected them, and I'm stronger for it. It's actually a pretty positive message, and it's one you could run with. You know, if you really wanted to promote Jeff Hardy as something, that's the one thing you want to do, is to say, I'm an example for the people who might be watching here who says, yeah, I drink a lot, but I can't seem to kick it. Or, yeah, I do drugs, but I can't seem to get it. Well, this would be your guy then. This would be the guy who says, look, I did it. I've been where you are, and I beat it. And so can you. So if you want to do that with Jeff Hardy, by all means, do it. But you're giving him a match with Samoa Joe, and the one thing Jeff Hardy said that was exactly correct is, ever since Samoa Joe's been here, you've done exactly nothing. You've won nothing. What have you won? Every feud you've gotten into, you lost. You had multiple matches with Brock Lesnar, didn't win. You had all kinds of matches with AJ Styles, you lost. Every feud you're in, you're losing. Got eliminated from the Survivor Series like you were a preliminary wrestler first night out. They've done zero with Samoa Joe. So I do have to believe that Samoa Joe's got to win this. And if you're going to do that, then there ain't no point in saying, oh, you know, Jeff Hardy's the big role model, because then people will say, role model for what? He got his ass kicked, you know. So you got to watch that. But if the fans really are the authority, one of the people who will benefit is Samoa Joe, because the fans have been wanting Samoa Joe pushed for a long time. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not a huge Samoa Joe fan. I think he's great on the mic. I don't think he's all that great in the ring. In fact, I think a lot of his matches end up boring, even with top-level guys. Not all of them, but a lot of them end up boring. He's very good at talking his fight. He's not as good at putting on a great match. I hearken back to some of his matches with Nakamura in NXT, and even they were like, eh, okay. They weren't sensational. And I just, maybe it's just his style, but I'm just not a huge fan. But the fans like him, and the fans want him pushed. And if the McMahons are really serious about listening to the fans, then I would love to see a series of Rusev and Samoa Joe. Down the line, though, let Samoa Joe get a few wins under his belt. Let Rusev get some wins under his belt. Let's build these guys up, and then let's have them clash. So what was your thoughts on the whole Samoa Joe left-handed apology, Mike?
If this was how they're trying to do with Samoa Joe, it could have been done better, but, you know, it fit. And you're absolutely right on what they need to do with Samoa Joe. And, look, if where we're going with Rusev is a thing, a feud with Samoa Joe, again, you're right. They're going to have to do something to make it look like both guys are, you know, are good, that it's going to be an even match. And it might come at the expense of Nakamura, but we all think that Nakamura is probably not long for the WWE, probably after Mania, you know. But how soon do they want him to drop that title?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the thing. I mean, we'll see what happens. I'll just put it that way. We'll see what happens. But the bottom line of the situation is the WWE, both on SmackDown and Raw, if they truly want to usher in a new era, have to put their top guns forward. They have a wealth of talent. But we're talking about SmackDown right now, so let's talk about that wealth of talent. You have Andretti Cien Almas, who is one of the best in-ring workers I've ever seen. He has not shown 1/100th of what he can do in that ring since he got here. Not 1/100th. If you're not an NXT fan and you don't watch a lot of NXT, go back and find Andretti Cien Almas against Johnny Gargano, and you'll see what Almas can do. It's amazing. It's an amazing match. It's one I still shake my head when I watch and say, I don't even understand how you call a match like that. I just can't understand it. There was not one part of that match that felt like it was called. It looked like they were fighting. Simple as that. You have Theorio Jr., legendary. You have AJ Styles. You have Daniel Bryan. You have Samoa Joe. You have Nakamura. Holy mackerel. There's six guys right there, and that's not even counting Randy Orton. That's not counting when John Cena comes back occasionally. That's not counting a lot of people. That's not counting your, you know, Mustafa Ali, who's now showed up. That's not counting your tag teams. You have a wealth of talent on SmackDown. You need to accentuate them. Show what we can do. One thing I would like to see the return of, and I'm going to ask everybody if I'm crazy, because I know the WWE is so worried about, oh, they'll switch channels. They've been doing a little of it on Raw. I want to see the return of the squash match, but I don't want to see local talent. I don't want to see, oh, here's some guy I never heard of. I want to see a certain amount of guys employed by the WWE, even if it's four or five of them, who can go to both brands, whose job is just to go in there and get beat up. Put on a good fight, but get beat up. Maybe it's going to be Zack Ryder. Maybe it's going to be Heath Slater. Maybe it's going to be whoever. It doesn't really matter. And let's see that. Let's see Andretti Cien Almas versus Zack Ryder. 10 minutes, 12 minutes, with Almas getting 8 minutes most of the offense, but a little bit of a comeback, so we have a match. But let's see all of Almas's moves. Let's see all of those great spots. So we are left going, whoa, I didn't know that guy was that good. Curtis Hawkins is another one you can use. Let's see these people. It's not exactly a squash match. It's a build-up match. And by that, I mean the guy just doesn't beat you for 9 minutes. He has a little offense. He gets his moves in, a few of his moves in. But by you having 8, 9, 10 minutes to highlight what you can do, the fans get to see your talent. They used to be called carpenters because they built up the other guys. Doesn't mean they just got pounded, because when you're just getting pounded, you don't get the spots in. You just get, you know, a guy who's dominant. That's fine if you're like Lars Sullivan. You want to throw Lars Sullivan in against Zack Ryder, then he should just beat him to death. I get it. But not an Almas. Not somebody like that. Somebody like that, you have to give him 10 minutes and show, oh, look at the reversal of the reversal. Look at this move. Look at that move. Look at the series of moves. Like they do in NXT sometimes. They use a few people for that. Chris Hero is one of them, right? I mean, they use him like that. There's a lot of guys they use like that. How come we can't have that? Give me four or five guys on your roster that you're really not using much. Zack Ryder, obviously, Curt Hawkins. Maybe you want to use Heath Slater in that role, although I think, you know, you've done that to death with the poor guy. But give me four or five guys. Ty Dillinger, whoever it happens to be, whose job it is to go in there and stretch a match out 5 or 6 minutes or 8 minutes with a guy to highlight what they can do. Give me that guy. What's your thoughts on that, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, you could even use some of the 205 guys like that. I mean, what's his name? Sliced Bread number two.
Kendrick?
On the main roster. Kendrick, you know, bring him up and use him in that way. You know, his time on 205 Live is basically, and he's a good enough guy on the mic, and he's got enough personality about him that you could use him in that way. You know, and
yeah, because we never get to see Mike. We never get to see, like, okay, here's Rusev, and he comes out and he has a 10-minute match with, I don't know, let's just say Curt Hawkins. And Hawkins gets in a little offense, but not much. But we get to see all of the stuff Rusev can do. And we're left saying, man, look at what Rusev did tonight. I didn't see him ever do half those moves. And I didn't know he was that agile. And I didn't, wow, that looked devastating. And then here comes Samoa Joe. And he has to face, I don't know, Ty Dillinger. And we see all that Samoa Joe can do. And we're left as fans saying, I wonder what would happen if they both fought. See, that's what we're missing in wrestling, because they're always fighting top stars. Every match on Raw, every match on SmackDown, with very few exceptions, is a top star fighting a top star. So we are robbed of that ability as fans to say, I wonder what would happen when these two clash. Because they always clash. Every match you see on pay-per-view is, oh, I've seen that on Raw. In some capacity, 90% of the time, that's the case, Todd.
Yeah, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, like what Mike said about the Brian Kendrick, I think he should come up to the main roster. I think his time on 205 is over, is about up.
Yeah, it ain't looking too good for him over there, is it? So, Mike, what's your overall rating this week for SmackDown Live?
I like this, and I'm going to go ahead and give it a B minus. And look, if we need it for the men, we need it for the women as well. And to tell you the truth, I think the women on both shows need a secondary title. You know, maybe
it would be nice. It would be nice if we had some kind of a women's intercontinental. We'll see what happens. I still say we might be looking down the barrel of a women's TV show. Todd, what's your rating this week?
I got to go on Mike there, a B minus.
I'm going to make it three. I think it was a good show. It entertained me. Seemed to go by pretty quick. I didn't see any major changes other than we got the tag team situation rectified a little bit. But again, it's the holiday season, folks, and you know, not many people are watching. They're gonna be on remote for a little bit. Sunday, we're going to have our show where we're going to ask the question, what do the fans want from the WWE, and will they give it to us? Join us then, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.